This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
This is the point where I usually come in with an anecdote or something that happened today, a conversation starter with Karen, but I have prepared nothing.
Chris, I don't think you should feel so much responsibility. This is a 50-50 joint venture, Spike Lee joint, and we share that responsibility at the top of the show.
Along those lines, I want to do the right thing. And so I, a Spike Lee joint.
Look, I'm here in Crooklyn just trying to figure out what to say, because I also prepared nothing.
Listen, Malcolm. X number of things could happen from not having a topic off the top.
Listen, Malcolm, I don't want to put you in the middle. That is not actually canon. That's not Spike Lee canon at all.
It is not? Wait a minute.
He directed episodes 3 to 7.
Really?
No, not really. No. All of this is pretend.
Oh, okay. I'm up to speed now. Here's a little, and Dave walked away, so we have to do this. I went on a surf trip up in unlikely cold Puget Sound of Washington with friends of mine from college that I have not seen two of them in over 20 years.
Wow.
And it was the best time, and we went into an ocean that looked like boiling water, but temperature-wise was the opposite. And I'm sore, like I got beat up by a truckload of cowboys, and
NorCal surfing is fucking serious. People don't talk about enough how tough you have to be, how real it is. They have legit great white sharks just swimming alongside them. Plus the water is like near zero temperatures. Plus abalone might stick on you.
Abalone?
Just throwing stuff in. But there's dangers.
I didn't think about the processed meat fish.
Don't.
Think
about that crustacean.
Just surfing alone is just like Kyle Kinane once said, it's like falling off a roof and then having the house chase you over and over. I just got beat up by waves, but I did pretty well. I think I'm kind of caught the surfing bug, and I think I'm going to go again.
Hope so, because your hair screams I'm a surfer, so you need to live up to it.
Yeah, it's the only choice I have. Look at me.
Yeah.
Just look at me, Karen.
Why don't you look at the guest we have today, who is a man who is he's a host, a television host. He's an author.
He used to be a VJ. He hosted 120 minutes, if I'm not mistaken.
He's done it all. He's truly done it all. He's already been a podcaster, and now he's about to be a brand new podcaster on a brand new series, limited series that's coming out. Ladies and gentlemen, on exactly right.
Yeah, I didn't mess it up, did I?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Dave Holmes to this.
Oh, hi.
Dave Holmes.
How are we?
We are great.
I think we're doing good.
Yeah.
Good. It looks, everybody looks good. Everybody has a happy, healthy glow.
So do you. Your hair looks terrific.
Thank you so much. Now, as we, let me turn these out. So yeah, I too have like gone.
Yeah.
I'm growing the hair out. It is largely obscured by my headphones, and I'm going to make it so that it is obscured again.
Dave, your hair has a real Beethoven vibe to it. It is wild. You seem like a mad composer.
Great.
With that hair.
That's kind of what I'm going for. That's a little bit what I'm going for. Yeah.
It's happening. I'm seeing it.
Okay, good. Good. Thank you. Yeah. A year without a barber was kind of, the impetus. And then it started growing. I was like, you know what? I'm going to let this ride. You know, who knows when I'll be on camera for anything next? You know, this is the time to experiment is when you're a college sophomore or now. So I can't have that time back. I'm letting it go for a little while. Yeah. I'm sure I'll go back to the high and tight at some point, but I've always liked the idea of being like a shaggy salt and pepper guy at some point in my life. And
you're like a scarf away layers. From. You're a scarf away from looking French. You really are right there.
Yeah. Oh, you said you know just what to say.
I mean,
you're ascot and baguette away.
Really, what I feel like is the Real World Season 2 replacement cast member Glenn from the band Perch. That's what I feel like I'm giving. That's a unique and specialized look, but that is what I feel like it is.
Wait a
Incredibly
minute.
Incredibly specific.
Did you have a
Did real I go world, too deep?
Did you have a no real way. World podcast for a while or something?
Yes, and I still do. I still do.
What?
On occasion. Yeah. With Mike Doty of Soul Coughing, we're both obsessed with the Real World. And so we went episode by episode through season one when it came out I guess it had come out on streaming, but I got my hands on a copy of the whole season with the original music, which is, that's what you got to do. And then there was Homecoming, and now there's going to be a second season of Homecoming with the season two people. I don't know whether it includes Glenn from Perch. We started recapping the London season, and then Mike started recording a new album, and then he got a cheap ticket to Rome. So he was there for a month, and now he's at some like artist commune in upstate New York. So we just haven't been able to do a new one, and we're terrible at promoting, and we didn't say anything on social media. So the fans of the podcast think that we're feuding. And now because they think that we're feuding, we're not going to do anything to like dispel that rumor, because what a fun rumor. I've always wanted to have an infamous beef.
Yeah,
and you gotta be with a good friend about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You gotta manufacture controversy, and the only other way to do that is to drop a sex tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
Yeah.
No, I don't no. want to see no. that. No, no one wants no, to I, see that.
You don't want to see yourself.
No.
Other people might want to see it, but it's hard to watch yourself.
I doubt that.
There could be a very specific, kind of VJ fetish that you don't know about.
What if there is a VJ fetish out there in the world? I'm sure that exists.
There must be.
I'm sure that exists.
There must be.
Mm-hmm. Well, this hair is going to put a stop to that. That's for damn sure.
No, you went through the same thought process. When else am I going to have a time to do this? To
exactly.
just let the hair ride? And I can't go back. I've gone in for haircuts where I'm like, I'm doing it this time.
Uh-huh.
And then haircutting people, that's what I call them, are hesitant. They'll be like, everyone secretly wants to grow out their hair, and they won't cut mine. And they talk me into just some like a reshaping, or take away the founding father triangle of it.
Yes.
And then I've gone in for full high and tights, and I get talked out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've had that experience a couple times of my own self.
Because I'm real, it's less work, I guess, to only do a trim. I just now realized that.
Well, you both have very, very quality hair, though. Thank That's you. The kind of hair that people want to see grown out. Because you have, like, it's like, you know, kind of curly. Dave, yours is wavy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is it's a good head of hair. Both.
Thanks. I think, yeah, I think we both have the foundations.
You and I look like we could be related.
We do, actually.
I'm looking right now. Yeah. I mean, we used to have the same high and tight. And then right now...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our hair is related.
I'm seeing as a brother.
So yeah, I let it go for a long, long time. And then when it was like safe to go to the, you know, to a hair cutting person again, I was like, well, I might as well like make a story out of it. So I like wrote a thing about, because I'm not, you know, a lot of people that I know are doing the same thing of just like, we're going to take this opportunity and be middle-aged guys with long hair. And it's like, there are some good things to know about, you know, proper hair care and like what to do when you go. Cause you do need every couple months to go and have somebody get in there, you know, like take the weight out of this area so that I'm not in Journey in 1978. That's a big thing. Cleaning up around the ears and, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, so I did that and now I'm just going to keep it for a while. There's also an element of like Jackie O wearing the suit after the assassination. She was like, well, none of us were alive, but famously she said she kept it on, even though obviously it was filthy, because she was like, I want them to see what they've done. and it's like, there's a part of like this last 2 years has been such a fucking shit show that it's like, look. Look,
wait a minute.
At how
things
you
are
changed
not normal.
Me. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We can't go back to the way things were.
Filthy, do you mean riddled with brains?
I did mean riddled with brains. Yeah. That was
oh my
nicer
God. I didn't
way.
Know that. The piece of trivia. Yeah. She kept wearing it?
Mm-hmm.
God,
for the rest of
terrific.
That day. For when they swore LBJ in and all that for like all kinds of other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone was probably like, you have to take that off. And it's like, yeah, why? You
know, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway,
yeah.
I didn't know that
LBJ
either.
Was like, this is kind of taking the wind out of my sails.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
do we have to have the
everyone,
suit
probably.
Next to me?
His sails were so full of wind before she did that. He was stoked.
Yeah,
day
sure
of triumph. Very,
well, this is the best day of my life. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Can we just go back for one second?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. But... I just have a question about the real worlds.
Yes.
Because it's just perfectly my age where the first season of The Real World, I was there for every episode.
Pedro.
I think,
no.
Yeah. But it got to whenever it got to San Francisco, it was when I stopped paying attention. Mm-hmm. But how many seasons of The Real World have there been?
Yeah.
I couldn't even count at this point because they used to do like one a year through the 90s, right? And then I think they started doing two, and then there was the challenge. Well, then they introduced road rules, and then there was the challenge, and then it went away, and then it came back like with a twist, and it was all like you're in a house with, you know, strangers, but also your brother who you don't like or your ex or whatever. And so now they keep making them, but it's these like gimmicky versions that I have not paid attention to in a long, long time. But surely we're into the 30s by now.
Sure.
Jesus, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the first eight or so are on Paramount Plus, and then there's a long break, and then it picks up at around 16, and it's to the present day.
Wow.
So, ostensibly, if you and Mike Doty make up and you bury this hatchet, you could go back and continue podcasting on that topic for quite some time.
Endlessly. We won't. Because I don't think either of us, I think maybe New Orleans was the last one that I was really like engaged in. I kept tabs on it for a few years after, but then it just, you know, once the hot tub moved into the house, it was like, no, this is not. This is not what it was. This is a shadow.
That's not my real world.
It is not my real world. I don't want to engage with it. So
was that new? Because that sounds like a Big Brother move. Like they were kind of maybe adopting things from other popular.
It was
reality
around
shows.
Las Vegas or Hawaii. that they did that. And then it just like people just hit the ground fucking, you know, and it wasn't like, it was, there was no like, you know, young idealistic social worker anymore. There was no, you know,
right.
Yes. There was no cellist with a dream. It was just like everyone was hot and horny and that was that.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Chris, that's just not a genre I love. Anyway.
Yeah. It's, I mean, look, it's entertainment.
Sure.
Chris, would you ever do a real world Big Brother reality shows type thing?
No, that thing, Reality Bites Back, which I was told before I did, it was a Comedy Central thing, and they told us it was a parody, and they compared it to Reno 911, a parody of reality shows. Oh, and it ended up being great, but the experience itself for all the comics was, oh no, we get eliminated. We have to do physical things. I had to do flips off a diving board. I had to do a lot of uncomfortable things, but Theo Von from Road Rules was one of the comics on that show. And I think he was kind of getting into stand-up at the time. But everywhere we went, everyone recognized Theo to where people would freak out. And that's not even real world. That's the Road Rules thing, which I don't even know. I know they're adjacent and there are challenges where those people have cage fights, I believe.
Sure.
But Theo was recognized everywhere. And I was like, oh, my God, this is clearly like a huge thing. But I didn't.
It's insane.
I was unhappy during the whole thing. And then I watched it and I'm like, oh, this is entertaining. I get it. It was fun to be part of that process. But it
so
was,
you've done
was,
the answer is you've done one.
I've done one and it was really stressful. And
I bet.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it while it was happening. And that's apparent on Reality Bites Back, which is not even available on iTunes anymore. I own it and I periodically watch it, but it had like Amy Schumer, it had Bert Kreischer, it had Michael Ian Black as the host, it had Tiffany Haddish was on it.
It's a great group.
It was, yeah, everyone got famous, but I'm doing okay. Anyway, the point is, it was really funny the way they edited things to then hold a mirror up to reality TV, because Three Ball was a company that made reality shows and they knew how to make fun of themselves. It was just ahead of its time, I think, because at that point, that was the most popular television. I think if that show was made now, it would be more popular, but it was funny. I'm advertising a thing that can't be watched. So,
well, but you can like post little clips from it if you want.
I should.
And
I should.
You can should. Always look back. I like yearbook style. Back.
Yeah.
I should rip stuff from wherever it exists.
And post it elsewhere.
Yes.
Always.
Elsewhere. Always. I will.
This would have been like 2000, 2001, but I hosted a real world reunion. I guess it was seasons like 5 through 8.
Yeah.
And it was in Las Vegas at the joint at the Hard Rock Hotel. Where else would you have it?
Hell yes.
And there was like a quick walkthrough rehearsal thing the day before. And you know, of course, all those people know each other, right? And so Cyrus from Boston, from Real World Boston, was like, you guys, I got a party van. And he rounded everyone up and got us in a party van and like secured us VIP tables and bottle service at like 5 different clubs all around town. Like, I've never seen anybody so like proudly just be like, hi, I'm a famous person. Here I am. Let me in and give me things. And these are my 30 friends. And like, just without any, like, if I tried to do that, I would giggle myself unconscious. Right.
Yeah.
But like, all of these people are like super white hot famous. And they're just like, yeah, let's just go be famous in this club.
Yeah.
Unbelievably ridiculous, like full night out.
That's so fun, right? It sounds amazing.
It was great. It was great. After it was over, it was like, I don't ever want to see any of those people again as long as I live. But like that, for that 12 hours or whatever it was terrific. Also, I was on ecstasy and I lost my cell phone. And so Dave from Real World Seattle kept grabbing it and was just like, are not in your right mind. I have your cell phone. And then like 5 minutes later, I was like, where's my cell phone? Cause he had it. And I went back to my room and I was like, well, I got to call my cell phone. And this is like 5 a.m. I got to call my cell phone and whoever picks it up, they have it and I'll get it. I completely forgot Dave had it. And I just picked up the hotel room phone and my finger did a familiar phone number pattern. It was my parents' house. I just accidentally on ecstasy called my parents' house at 5 a.m.
Oh God. How long did you talk to them and tell them you love them?
As soon as my mother picked up, I was like, ah! And that was that.
I'm not that high on ecstasy.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. That will sober you right up.
Wait, can I ask the question? Is your parents' home phone number the same as when you were a kid?
At that time it was. Yeah.
Oh,
no. Yeah. Maybe like from high school on.
Yeah. That's
a familiar number. Stupid. And also like, I am not a Las Vegas ecstasy person at all, but it's like just the fame and the, you know, the glamour that surrounds real world and road rules people in the year 2000. It's just like you make some decisions that you later regret. Whatever.
Don't you think we're all kind of Las Vegas ecstasy people? Because that's the whole idea. Las Vegas is this thing. I mean, that's what I kind of love about it. That just made me think of us going. I wrote on Zach Galifianakis's VH1 talk show. Absolutely. That was short-lived, but kind of epic in that. There were billboards for it all over town. They were trying to do this hipster call out thing that they got wrong. Uh-huh. But the music bookings were in fucking incredible. The Foo Fighters played on the show. Like the music bookings were amazing. Ice Cube was on it. What? Like it was great. Wow. So when it was over, we went to basically Zach and Joe Wagner. And maybe Tom Sharp, we all went out to meet Zach for some kind of a VH1 party. Yeah. And it was at one of those clubs. Yeah. And I don't drink, but on this one, I was like, well, I'm going to have a little bit of champagne. And I like, we just sat in some kind of like separate VIP room, but you could overlook. There was some kind of VH1 party because Cyndi Lauper was there. I remember looking over Cyndi Lauper was like standing on a balcony looking really pissed. It must have been some kind of like whatever, something.
Yeah.
But anyway, everybody got really fucked up. And at one point I was just dancing like it was my job. And it was like Joe and Zach and we were in a VIP suite that it was Tommy Lee's VIP suite.
Of course.
So he was there too.
Yeah.
It was he sleeps there. It was insanity. And I was just like, it was everyone a little bit lost their mind. And the next day when we had to fly home, I was so hungover. The second I woke up, I started throwing up and I threw up all the way until we boarded the plane.
From one glass of champagne.
I had many more after that first one.
Okay.
It went a little sideways, but, I think there's something about that where it's like, I never do that. But then if the combination is right and you're in Las Vegas, it's literally like truly anything goes. I mean, it's real.
Yeah, it is. It is. They pipe in bad decision
juice
powder like into the ventilation systems. Like it's definitely like I've never had a mistake free time in Las Vegas ever.
That's
they're not always
funny.
Huge and bad, but there's always one. There's always one miscalculation.
Because thinly and consistently over my life, I already make bad mistakes and I already drink and I already go out. So when I'm in Las Vegas, I'm kind of like, you know what? I'm going to be the sober guy tonight. I don't like when everyone else is doing it. I don't want to. Which is a famous Cranberries album. But I don't like Vegas as much because of that pressure, like, or New Year's or Halloween. It's like, you know what?
Yeah, New Year's
I
sucks.
Did New Year's last Wednesday. I'm not going to do it when everyone else is. Parking is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Barfing is bad. Sidewalk barfing. Bad.
Right. Don't like you go to Vegas and it's just you're seeing everyone's dad on their worst behavior drinking from a big plastic bong. They have these giant blue, everyone's got a giant long blue drinking thing.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what
yeah.
I'm talking about?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. But, a yard of something blue.
A yard.
Which is just like, no, you do. Deck, you don't need yard. That. Yeah, you don't need that. New Orleans is also very similar.
Yeah.
In that, you know, like it is people who don't normally behave this way show up yep. there and they go to Fat Tuesdays and they get some frozen beverage and yep. immediately they black out. And it's just an yep. okay. So I was there, this goes back 8 or so years and I, like you, was like, I'm not going to participate. Also, I was working and I had an early call and I was like, okay, I'm going to whatever, hang out in my room, go to bed at 9 o'clock. At like 10 o'clock, I hear what as a dog owner, I immediately recognize as the sound of urine hitting a carpet. Right. and I go and I like listen at my door and it is sure enough, like someone pissing in front of my door. So I throw open the door and it is fully Milhouse's dad from The Simpsons with his dick in one hand and a glass of something blue in the other and fully just urinating. Right. And so I go, what are you doing? And he's like, and I said, where's your room? He said, I don't know. I said, put your pants up. And I grabbed him around the shoulder and I marched him down the elevator into the lobby and I deposited him to the manager. And I was just like, this man just pissed on my door, whatever. Turned him in. His room was directly across from mine. He didn't remember what his room was or he didn't have his card key or whatever.
How many days did you live across from him?
Like that's 2 or 3 more. I didn't say
hi, how
again.
Are you again? Good
yeah,
to see
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah,
what's
yeah,
up?
Yeah. But it was just like, oh, you just don't know how to do this. And
yeah.
that's what happens. And yeah. now it's like, now some poor, you know, maintenance person or whatever is going to have to scrub your urine out of a hotel carpet.
You know what?
You can't
they probably
handle
didn't.
Your.
That's the other thing yeah. I like about Vegas is they probably left that urine.
Maybe.
It's a filthy,
Maybe.
Filthy city.
It is. It's disgusting. It's
well, disgusting. It happens so much. New Orleans, like, when I went to New Orleans, I didn't drink, but I watched people have like one hurricane, those hurricane drinks.
Yeah.
Where you just, it's just like somebody being like, see you later. Yeah. Like, it's only going to take me one drink.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're skipping to 2:30 a.m.
Yeah.
But like right now at dinner at 7
yeah.
p.m. It's
yeah.
insane.
It's insane. The only experience that I've had like that, well, it's not the only experience I've had like that, but the one that I remember best is having Malort in Chicago. Some friends, I was there for a few months some years ago, and some friends had me over for dinner and a bunch of Chicago people they wanted to introduce me to. And they were like, because we're introducing you to Chicago, you have to have Malort. And there, you know, there had been wine at dinner and stuff. And I had Malort, which I don't know if you've had it, but it's this
no.
like wormwood liqueur that is, it's like big in Chicago.
It's like a Jägermeister type thing, right?
Yeah. In that way. It's like a, whatever that is. And,
fragrant.
And I had it and then I was like, well, that's awful. And 5 minutes later, then it was 45 minutes later.
Yeah.
Like I was like conscious of like, oh, I just lost time.
Yeah.
That's not
oh,
like, it's like, you know, like that kind of sleep where you close your eyes and you open them and it's the next
yeah.
morning. I was like in this part of the room and then I was in that part yeah. of the room and I was like, I don't, let's not do that ever again.
That's why Malort sounds like a magical wizard's name.
It does. It does.
It takes away time.
It takes away time. It's an evil wizard.
I wonder if it's wormwood, if it's that like that. What's the green one that.
Oh,
it
absence?
Made a comeback.
Absence.
Yes.
Yeah, could be.
I wonder if it's similar to that, where
could
there's almost like a psychedelic aspect to it.
Yeah, could be in the absinthe family. I could still be, this could still be my imagination from that. It could be 2015. I might still be, in Katie Reap's living room in Chicago.
You know what I
don't know.
What's
no, we can't.
Kind of gross about me is the thing I like the most about Vegas back when I did this is you could smoke in an elevator.
Ugh.
I know. There was ashtrays in the elevator and I'm like, we're living life now.
Oh,
but
man. Don't want to be without a cigarette for a second.
Yeah.
Terrible. Yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to live that way. No. Wait, can I tell my favorite Vegas elevator story? And I know I've told it already on this podcast, so sorry, Chris. But this was, we were in Vegas. I can't remember why. It was me and Mary Lynn Rice Cub and somebody else. And we were in an elevator and there was an old couple like in their probably 70s that were clearly there like, you know, to play like bingo hall bingo and be tourists. And then this girl and this guy got on the elevator and the girl was fucking hammered. And she had a full on like Vegas outfit, like a cute little mini dress. And she was out on the town, but she was shit faced. And the second they stepped on and the girl was like giggling and stuff, the old lady just got this look on her face. Like she was so pissed, right? she's like, got her arms crossed or whatever. And the girl's kind of looking around and giggling. And then when that old couple got off the elevator, the doors closed and this drunk girl turns to me and Marilyn and goes, "Nana was pissed."
That's really
good. She was like, I thought she was blacked out, but she was fucking right there with the whole thing. It was so hilarious.
I like her. I love her.
The perfect thing. Yeah.
She was like, what's her problem? It was the best.
A thing that we used to do a lot, Scott Gimple and I used to do this a bunch. We did it a handful of times. Just like Monday night in Vegas, just hop on a Southwest for $40 or whatever. There, it's like everything is cheap. No one is there except for some sad conference. You know, you have the run of the place because like, you know, the clubs don't really close. I mean, we're not clubs people, but like nothing really closes. Yeah. So you just anywhere that you've wanted to go, you can just go. And it's like everything is super cheap. You can get a hotel room for nothing and then, get back on a plane the next morning and go to work. It was so easy and fun.
Yeah, that does appeal to me. Yeah, everything does appeal to me as far as going somewhere and having fun.
Being in any place feels really enticing and compelling right now.
Literally, you talking about going to clubs with the real world people was my heart started to race where I was like, yes, go get in the limo, Dave. Yes. Where it's like, no, it already happened. It's a story.
Yeah. But I would do it again. They, by the way, have now a real world road rules challenge that's all the old people. So like Mark Long from the first season of Road Rules, who is 50 if he's one day old, is like, you know, in an Under Armour tank, pushing a boulder up a hill or whatever. It's all like the original, like it's the stalwarts of the franchise are back. I haven't watched it. It feels like I might, consider my mortality more than I want to.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But yeah, you have to face some stuff.
I'm going to have to face some stuff, and I'm not ready to, Karen.
Don't do it if you don't want to.
By the way, I'm just going to tell you, I just received a text notification from super producer of the Exactly Right family, Hannah Kyle Crichton.
Yes, Hannah Kyle.
Waiting for Impact is the number one podcast in the music category.
Yes.
As of September 24th. 2021.
Guys, and this Joe is just Budden the trailer.
Just the trailer.
Wow.
Yes.
So exciting. Congratulations.
Will we keep people once it's a thing that is longer than 3 minutes? We'll see.
This is, if I'm not mistaken, a podcast about the movie Deep Impact, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Big question that we need to answer is this the one that Tia Leone is in?
Yeah.
We'll get to that. I don't want to spoil anything, but we never really do answer that question.
Yeah. That might be season two. You could tackle that season two.
What's it really? What can you really, jokes aside, tell us?
Yeah. Give us the rundown of Waiting for Impact.
Okay. Pretend we're a long table of executives. Now go.
Oh. Oh, God. Oh, man.
I have an angry look on my face. I'm wearing a nice suit. And
I'm pyramiding my fingertips to intimidate.
Oh, wow. You've really set me up for success.
Yeah.
So in the Boyz II Men Motown Philly video from 1991, 30 years ago, There. If you'd like, I mean, if you'd like to. Yep, that's it.
I have to do it every time.
East Coast family.
We're East Coast family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, there, you know, there's like a mini roll call of, you know, Boys to Men, ABC, Another Bad Creation, BBD, Belle Biv DeVoe, whatever. Mm-hmm. Michael Bivins is building his East Coast family empire. And so those groups are also sort of featured in moments in Boys to Men's debut video. So like they're a band that's about to become huge, and their manager, Michael Bivins, is like, here's what you got to do. And like, and he puts these other acts in there so that they can kind of get a boost as well. And, among those acts, although they are not in the lyrics of the song, is a 5-member boy band called Sudden Impact. And they have a little moment, and it's against a black seamless background, and literally their name is in lights above them. And they point at the camera, real cocky, like, here we come, we're Sudden Impact, are you ready? And I was ready, and nothing happened. Nothing that I was able to see ever happened. And I've always in the back of my mind been like, there's a story there. But there was never like the right way to tell it, you know? Sure. It was like, it's not a book, probably, and it's probably too involved for like a magazine piece. And then I was like, what if it's a podcast? What if I track these guys down and it's a podcast? And 7 to 12 years ago, Karen and I had a conversation about it.
And
seriously,
it was easily three, if not 4 years ago.
Yeah,
right?
It was a long time ago. It was at the 101 Diner. Time.
Yeah.
So it's at least 2 years ago, because that shit's been closed for a couple years, right?
Our development process takes a while. We're very boutique about it.
Yeah, but you know what? It's worth it. It's worth it. You've got to take the time. We will release no podcast before it's time. But yeah, so I mentioned it to Karen and Georgia and Danielle Kramer a while ago. And they were like, let's do this. And I was like, all right. And so we did. And then immediately I was like, well, I really hope there's a story here, because now I am. No.
Oh, no. You hadn't done any investigating or
I had done the minimum of investigation to know that these people were, at least some of them were still alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then we began the process of trying to track them down and tell the story. And it's just become a thing that is like, you know, when you talk about anything that happened in the early 90s and, you know, the crazy white hot fame of Real World people included, you immediately start to realize how fundamentally different life in the 90s was. Like just everything about the way that we consumed entertainment was totally different. And, you know, things changed gradually over the course of decades. Okay. That is something an executive would do in the middle of a pitch.
the straw?
Yeah.
Loud, empty Starbucks
loud,
ice drink.
Empty sucking.
I tried to pull the mic away, but it was after
it was too late, Chris, it was too late. Okay.
It was just a commentary.
It was. But it's, you know, there's so much to get into in the way that, like, you know, just the fundamental facts of the 90s, you know, and the way that you, if you liked a record, you had to go and get it in your hands so that you put it into a machine that could translate it and into a thing that you could hear. And that machine was like at home.
Yeah.
You know, so like you had to, whatever. And also just like the nature of like fame and, you know, you hit middle age as I have. And it's like, if you are somebody who had and has, you know, artistic goals or dreams or whatever, it's like you get out into the actual world and, you know, life is different than what your expectations and dreams were. Not in necessarily a bad way, but it is different. Anyway, the more that I got into the story, the more it was like, this is about a lot. This touches on a million areas that really interest me. And so we now have Waiting for Impact, a Dave Holmes passion project with the excellent team at Exactly Right.
Well, and if I may say, as a person who has gotten to listen to this and has been excited since the pitch, because we all know that kind of thing where like there's pitches where you just hear it and you're like, it's just a great idea. This people cool. will like this, because you don't have to know, you don't have to have been there
right.
to have a person tell you the story of it and get you and pull you in.
Right.
But the thing that I love and the thing that is, it's very exciting to work with someone like Dave because he's a journalist. So he's like a, you know, he's business bottom line. Right. And so in these first couple of episodes where it was like, how is this going to last? And then pulling out themes. So there's just really it's aside from the story itself, which is a very interesting thing from a very specific time. There's also these themes that are very universal about like, you know, the goals we give ourselves, the expectations we put on ourselves. When we don't meet them, what happens? How that's not always a bad thing. Failing is not a bad thing, even though our culture tells us exactly the opposite. It actually spurs you on to do other things. Like, it's a really great, it's just a great listen. There's a lot of really amazing stuff in that podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
And it's that. All 10 episodes are finished.
They are.
Yeah.
They like are. That. If you're an if you're a Stitcher Premium subscriber, you can listen to all 10 all in a row if you want to. Now, that is a lot of me all at once. I think
10 hours of Dave. Get into it.
It's a lot. It's a lot. But you can do it. If you want to do it, you can do it. If not, new episodes will come out every Tuesday starting October 12th.
In the early 90s, I know that people ask you about this all the time, but I know you pretty well and I've never. How did you end up submitting yourself or trying to be on that, the VJ? Do you want to be a VJ? What was it called? I remember
it was called Want to Be a VJ. Yeah.
Seeing it and rooting for you. And,
thank you.
And not Nikki Six or whatever his name is.
Jesse Camp. And
Jesse Camp, right. No, that guy took everyone by storm. But and then you, after that, if I'm not mistaken, just legitimately, they're like, well, I'll... Joke aside, let's actually give this guy a job, right? Like they then employed you.
Well, I do love that you asked if I submitted myself because
it's a real,
that is what I did. I stuck myself in the mail.
They went to St. Louis. Yeah, you sent a vial of your blood.
No, I lived in New York. It was happening in New York.
Oh, okay.
And I was already living there. I was working in advertising and not doing well. And I was like looking for something else. I knew that I was destined for something else. I didn't know what. But of course, like the MTV VJ job is like the dream job. You just get to talk about music and go all over the place and all that.
Yeah.
So, I was, at work and this was early internet days. Like I guess I had AOL or something at home, but
sure.
At my office, I had, Angel Fire. I don't know.
Earthlink?
Are you guys talking about sci-fi shows on the...
on Thursday mornings from my office computer, I would go to billboard.com and check the charts on Tuesday mornings. It was. And I went to check them on this April day in 1998. And there was a sidebar story saying MTV is going to hold an open call for VJs. And it's like, well, that's, I'm going. And so I called in sick from work that Monday, the day of the thing. And I went and
so
it was
you did
like,
indeed submit yourself.
I did indeed submit myself. I did stand in line and all that.
Yes.
And it was this thing that was, once you got to like the top 10 that Wednesday, then they narrowed it down to 5. And then we were on the live show on like Thursday and Friday. And then there on Saturday, there was a live, like a 4-hour live event. And I didn't get the job, but I was like, I'm going to get a job here. Like I was 26 or 27 at the time.
Yeah.
And I, you know, had worked in the actual real world for long enough to know that I wanted to be there. Doing that. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to go to the rap party and just like shake every hand and get every business card. And like, you know, and everyone was very supportive. All the execs who were my age, were all like, you know, you should work for us in some way. And I was like, great. I would love to. And I just like, I went home and I started writing a bunch of half-assed like pitches and things. And I just kept calling. Like that Monday, I was like, they'll forget me if I don't Tommy gun them with phone calls and emails.
Yeah.
And so I did. And it ended up working out.
That's great. Because that's something I've never been comfortable doing. Now I am.
Yeah.
But at that age, it's like I was too scared to put myself out there.
Yeah. I remember like my self-talk being like, put your feelings in a box somewhere, lock them in a trunk and just have them later. Be shameless, like be as confident as you have ever pretended to be and just, you know, keep going. Cause you'll either get a meeting and a polite no, or yes, or they'll just be like, we don't have anything for you. You know what I mean? Like right, nobody's going to shame you.
No, you came in second place. Like, that's the perfect move. That's Jennifer Hudson on American Idol and so many other people where it's like all of that is people know there's a politic aspect. There's, you know, there could have been some executive somewhere that's like pulling the levers. Who knows? But you showing up, like there's something about the good sportsmanship of you being like, thank you so much, because you're not bitter for being second place. You're grateful and you're there to go, hi, this was amazing. I love it. That's what people like to be around.
Yeah.
That whole idea of like, oh, I'm mad or I'm going to go and cross my arms in the corner. No one gives a shit. They don't have time for people like that. And you basically met that with like, this is a positive, this is an opportunity. And everyone goes, fuck yeah, we want to be around a guy like that. Yeah.
Right.
Plus
right.
they all are riddled with sympathy because they're like, oh God, that's the guy that lost.
Exactly. Totally. You can work nice that.
Use it.
You can work that. You can absolutely work that angle. Why not?
Well, and just because people voted for Jesse Camp doesn't mean that was their the executive's pick.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, you give them the benefit of the doubt.
And, you know, the thing is, I did benefit from that, you know, dichotomy, that sort of like binary between me and him. Because, I mean, he was a wild, attention-getting character in a way that I will never be. But also, you know, there is an element of like, you know, speaking in complete sentences that a TV job entails.
Right.
And so we, you know, when I was around the halls and like new shows were being developed or weekend specials were being developed or whatever, it was like, he'd get a segment, but then they would just be like, who's going to anchor the thing? And if I was around the hallway, which by the way, I always was like, if my job had me there 2 days a week, I was there 5 days a week. Cause like, why the fuck not be there? In the nerve center. So just kind of always
the advertising
there. Yes, I did. I did. I had to like phase. By that time, I was like temping, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I sort of was doing a little bit of both for a minute. And then there was a night where I had to like, it was my last day in my advertising office and somebody new was about to start and I had to get kind of everything in order. And I was there on a weekend, kind of late into a Sunday night. And then I went home. And then that Monday morning, a town car came to pick me up at my apartment and take me to the beach house because it was summer.
Yes.
And I got out and like Funkmaster Flex was like playing and it was Michael Bergen from Baywatch had a workout show. So it was like,
Where was Eric Nies?
I guess Eric had moved on to pastures new by then.
Saving dolphins already.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just like I got out. Oh, this is I do this now. This is my life.
Yes,
that's so
just
cool.
Wild as hell. Wild,
like
as hell.
Overnight. Go from temping to the beach house.
Overnight. Like literally overnight. It was completely wild. You can't beat that shit.
No, that's amazing.
The only thing with MTV that I really did, I actually recorded it every night and I had a stack of VHS tapes, was 120 minutes.
Yes.
And you for a while, how'd you just went that direction? Like,
they needed a host for a while. I wasn't there for very long. And I'll tell you, I was there for 3 or 4 months. But there,
really? Because I remember you being on there. That's I watched it.
Yeah, I would maybe fill in on occasion, but I was only like full time there for like 3 or 4 months, and it definitely started as like an interim thing. And I mean, I wanted to make it full time, but I was also hosting Say What Karaoke at the same time, which was a very poppy daytime, you know. Yeah. Strip show. And so some people wrote actual angry letters that like a pop guy was hosting the alternative show. And the executives, who again were, you know, 26, 27 years old, were sensitive to that. And so I forget who ended up getting it after me. That person stayed on for a while. Matt Penfield? Yeah. Penfield was before me.
I mean, those guys, anyone that's ever hosted 120 Minutes just seems like they were a roadie for the Pixies at some point.
Exactly. So exactly. Like,
yeah. They have like a raspy voice from pulling cable.
Yeah, a lot of cable today. Right. Also, at the moment that I was hosting it, it was difficult to know what alternative meant. It was a weird, it was like 99-ish, 2000.
Right.
And, you know, the post-Nirvana thing had sort of petered out.
Yeah.
And so the acts that I was interviewing, as I remember them, were Stained, Sean Mullins.
It's been a while, huh?
Sean Mullins. Liz Phair, who I love, and Tori Amos, but then then also all these like sludgy, depressing soul patch guys who was like, I don't understand why they're here. I don't understand why I'm here. It was like my dream show, but it was just a weird time for alternative music.
Yeah. It's funny though, because I miss when saying I like alternative music did answer the question when someone says, what kind of music do you like? Because now I'm like, I don't know. The words aren't indie, alt, indie. I don't know. I get frustrated when asked that question because there isn't a word. At least alternative was all encompassing of everything I was willing to listen to, with the exception of the band Live or Three Doors Down or Third Eye Blind or Goo Goo Dolls or, you know, I could go on.
Okay. The list does go on. Okay. Let me tell you something. Okay. So this is probably 18 years ago, maybe. This is like very shortly after I moved to Los Angeles. There are Late Times with Zach billboards all over Los Angeles. What was it called? Late World.
Late World, yeah.
Late World. And Late Times. And I was living sort of near LACMA. Who cares? But a bar that I would go to a lot was Barney's Beanery. I was young, callow youth, and I would often go to Barney's Beanery, which is sort of a low-key gay bar. It's in the neighborhood, and it's like, you know, it's a lot of like conflicted guys in their mid-20s who like don't want to go to, you know, Akbar or the Abbey or whatever.
Yeah.
But they'll go.
They can't go all the way into West Hollywood.
No, Silver
right there
Spoon.
On the edge.
Yeah. And they're, you know, whatever. Like they're straight, but no, they're not. Anyway.
Yeah.
Also, it's always karaoke night at Barney's Beanery.
That's why I went there. I was
sure.
No one knows how much I used to sing karaoke there, and I'm going to
really?
Keep the secret even today.
Yeah. Oh, our paths surely crossed back in those days.
Yeah. If they did, it was you saying, "Well, that was okay."
Well, it's just. Oh, I don't know that I ever on purpose went for karaoke night, but it just seemed like every time I was there, it was karaoke night.
Yeah.
And you know, and just the smell of a fried potato permeates the joint. But so I'm at a booth with some friends, with my back to the stage. Lightning Crashes by Live starts up karaoke night.
Yes.
And the singer sounds so much like Ed from Live. It's like that's crazy.
That was me.
No, Chris. No, Chris. That does sound a lot like Ed.
That was.
But it wasn't because it was Ed from Live.
What?
I turned around and it was Ed from Live. It was the actual Ed from Live
singing his own song
at karaoke night. I think this was after Rat Tail. Everyone rushed up to the stage, including me, and we were just like watching it. And what I remember most of all, was that like everyone was looking at each other for like social cues on like, what is this? How does this feel? Like, do we like this? Or is this
the nerdiest thing of all time, or is this the coolest thing?
Is this the saddest thing of all time? Or is this the biggest power move of all time? I don't know. So I'm gonna subcontract my feelings about this to the crowd. And like truly, we did not come to a consensus.
Oh my God.
And I still don't really know.
When I did this golf tournament in Montana, and there was a the night I had to do stand-up for all these ex-NFL players, some guy was playing acoustic guitar, and it sounded like Bob Denver. And it was nice to have it. It was just like Rocky Mountain High music. And then all of a sudden, this guest came.
John Denver.
And starts... No, okay. It was. And it was all songs about hammocks and the skipper.
coconut cream pies.
But this guy started singing with this acoustic guitar player, this In Sync song. And he sounded pretty good, but not amazing. But it was Chris, the guy named Chris.
Yeah,
he lives at Big Sky, and he sang with him and sang country songs and all. And everyone started filming him, and it took me a...
It was who?
This guy from NSYNC was singing.
Chris from NSYNC.
Oh.
But now he's just a dude that looks like a golfer, and he lives there, and he's like, sure, I'll show up and not get off stage because I'm having so much fun. Actually, at the end, I really liked him a lot. He did every genre of music.
I bet.
And yeah, with this old guy playing guitar, and they'd obviously played together before.
Sure.
Because they're the only two musicians in all of Big Sky, Montana.
Sure.
You
know what?
But everyone pulled out their phones and
It was, and then immediately the next day they looked at their photos and they're like, I don't remember that guy's name.
Yeah.
But I bet that's a good life. Like, I think it is probably a lot of pressure to be Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's got to be a lot of fun to be Chris Kirkpatrick. It's definitely a lot of fun to be Joey Fatone. Right.
Yeah.
He's like, I think he knew even in the day, like, I'm not going to have a music career after this, but I'll amass a fortune and I'll just like, I guess I'll host some GSN game shows after this is over. You know,
I will do a deep tease for Waiting for Impact.
Ooh.
There is a guest. Mm-hmm. Do you want to say the name or not?
I think we have said the name.
You have? Joey McIntyre from the New Kids on the Block.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Gabe interviews him on one episode, and he is... It was much too late for me, obviously. Mm-hmm. I couldn't love that guy more.
He's
like, he just is so salt of the earth.
He's
like
a treasure. Yeah.
He's come through the fire in a very real way.
Yes.
I look at the New Kids in a different way because I actually was kind of rooting for them. And then they came out with their harder stuff where Marky Mark's cousin was like rapping and stuff. I'm like, wow, they're adapting. Are they going to be? I was listening to it and starting to like it. And I was already going into high school and listening to The Cure and stuff. But man,
I
always rooted for them.
We will get into their hip hop moments. Don't you worry.
Coming up.
Yeah.
On Waiting for Impact.
I can't believe it's out in the world or about to be.
Congratulations on your number one spot music. I mean, that's very exciting, and that's a great... It's bodes well for the performance of it, but it doesn't matter if 10 people listen to it or a billion.
Well,
it's great.
It
matters very much.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely have a meeting if only 10 people listen, but it's a quality product.
And it's, so it's just a trailer for it. And
right now it's just a trailer. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
I don't know how it works on Apple Podcasts, but it's just, you know, listen, I'll take it. It's a number one and I'll take it.
They're just recording who's listening to what. And so they're on your feed listening to it. It's great. Mm. It's great news.
I'm delighted.
Is that anything else you want to plug before we go?
Wow. let's see. What do I want to plug? I did just get to take it back to the 90s yet again. I got to talk to Tom DeLonge for Esquire a couple weeks ago. That is up on the site now. I did not make the drive down to San Diego to talk to him. And I'm delighted that I didn't, because a conversation with him is so utterly head spinning that I am not kidding when I tell you that I ended the Zoom meeting and I put my head down on my desk and I took a little nap. He is so like, he's lovely. And a lot of his like UFO research has been used like literally by the Pentagon and shit. Like he has been like vindicated and validated as like a source on this stuff.
I don't know anything about this guy. What's
okay? So he was the guitar player in Blink 182, and then left the band to chase aliens do UFO research and stuff. And it was like ridiculous back then. But yeah. Now, again, like a lot of his research has, like some of the shit is really.
Does like, he think the earth legit. Is flat? Okay.
He might. Honestly.
Yeah, sure.
But no, I don't think he does. Like, I should send you the transcript. It is truly like.
Wow.
He said Bigfoot, I think before he said hello.
Oh,
like it's wild as hell. So that is up and out in the world.
That's so great.
Amazing.
I am of course in a legendary blood feud with Mike Doty.
Yeah, you guys gotta patch that up.
Well, I mean, maybe we will, and maybe we won't, but you'll certainly find out about it.
It's hard to when someone pulls a knife on you like he did.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't do that, Mike Doty.
All you did is overturn that table. Mm-hmm. What a weird wedding, huh?
Yeah.
Well, the royal family will remember it. I'll tell you that much. I'm just see what I'm doing. I'm feeding
Prince
into
Philip. Yes, you're doing.
You're yes-anding, and I appreciate it, and I admire it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm still doing homophilia with my friend Matt McConkie, talking to awesome queer people.
Awesome. Nice.
About their awesome queer lives.
Yeah.
You know, just keeping busy, guys.
Just podcasting your ass off.
Podcasting.
Well, Dave, thank you for taking the time to be here with us.
Oh, my God. It is such
what a delight. It went by so fast.
It really did.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did.
Yeah, it was really quick. I was like, Karen, why are you stopping us at 1.5 hour? Oh, never mind.
Oh, how long have we been talking?
Just one full hour.
Yeah. No, great.
You know, standard. Well, that concludes this episode. You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN.
AR!
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date. Terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris.